So this is the Center update. Wow, we have, feels like full service today. Oh, I see, we're cordoned off. Well, if you can find a seat, welcome, come on in. It's our Bloomsday service, special service today. Anyway, this is the Center update with Dr. Gary, an opportunity for me to share some of the things that happen behind the scenes that aren't necessarily apparent from Sunday to Sunday. And one of the things I'm wanting to mention, announcement that's upcoming, in 3 weeks we're going to hold an orientation for anyone who is not a member of Unity Spiritual Center. So if you've come since Jane and I have been here, we haven't taken in new members since we've been here, and so we will begin to introduce our new membership process, which is a phase system. There's two phases to the process. The beginning phase, the entry phase, is the community member part where there aren't any requirements to join the church. Just simply come to the orientation and say yes to three things. We want God's calling. Put your phones on stun. There are three things that we ask that you say yes to. One is to participate in spiritual enrichment. So that means taking some classes and participating in our small group ministry program. And then we ask that you say yes to some form of meaningful involvement in the life of our community, serving in some particular way. Of course, you decide all of these things. And then third, finally, we ask that you say yes to some form of minimum member contribution. In other words, you designate a specific amount that you're willing to commit to giving each month as a way of supporting and being in ownership for Unity Spiritual Center. If you say yes to those three things, then we want to welcome you into our community by celebrating your belonging. We belong to you and you belong to us. So that's going to happen on May 22nd. So that's all the center update we have. We're going to move right into our service. So let's get ready for our meditation experience. Awesome. Very cool. So Dr. Jane says hi to everybody. I spoke to her this morning and wanted to connect, and she's in Canada right now. Obviously, many of you know that. She's in grandmother heaven, and she gets to visit both her son and her daughter. They're sort of 2 hours by flight apart from each other, and so she's not only in Canada, but she gets to fly in Canada to various places. So anyway, she sends her love and her greetings. She'll be back next week, and looking forward to being back, and I'm looking forward to having her back. Yes, as you might know that. So today I'm doing this talk called The One Thing, and it's an introduction to the healing codes, which will be a Tuesday book study that Jane will start on May 10th at 11:30. How many of you are familiar with The Healing Codes, the book? Several of you are. Excellent. Okay, well, it's a little introduction about that. And so Jane left off with us retiring from being the general manager of the universe. You remember that talk? So what that means is that we shift out of our driven behavior mode, where we have to have things be a certain way, and we're out there making those certain things happening. We shift away from that, that's called driven behavior, to inspired action. Well, where we simply are guided in the context of what we're having as our experience with respect to what it is that we need to think, say, and do. So when you retire from managing the universe, in other words, being in control of every little thing, that means you have to let go of being in control or being in charge, which then means you have to just deal with, okay, God's in charge. Okay, so but then you still have to worry about stuff, right? Because that's what we do. When we can't control what's going on in our life, we do the next thing, and that's just sort of in the virtual living room, we experience another dimension of that driven behavior, except we're not behaving a certain way. Instead, we're locked in this feedback loop. And we learned last week, or at least I shared last week, that in order to break the feedback loop, we have to have an intervention. And part of the intervention has to be with settling our nervous system, because part of what that feedback loop is that we're being held hostage by our thoughts and our internal dialogue, and we just can't stop it. And so we need to move our awareness outside of our central nervous system into the peripheral. That's why we stretch our fingers. And the second thing is we move from thinking to sensing. In other words, we stop thinking and we begin just to notice what we're sensing, what we're aware of, what we're feeling. That also shifts the energy and minimizes the feedback dynamic of that internal dialogue. And then the third thing that we talked about was shifting our state of being, how we be with what we're having. So if we're caught up in a worry feedback loop, we're being with whatever we're having out of a fear. And so to shift from fear to being present in the moment, taking in the moment, sensing, feeling, then we can begin to break that. Now today, we're going to go even deeper, and we're going to look at the stuff that we don't know that we have. And we'll never know that we have it, but yet we know that we have stuff that we don't know that we have. That ultimately can contribute to how we feel about our life, and more specifically, how whether or not we're healthy or not, that we're well or not. Now, I don't know if you have noticed, but our congregation is aging in some areas, insofar as opposed to a younger congregation where the demographic is more 20s and 30s and 40s. Ours is 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, so to speak. And so we have a different dynamic. And so what's happening is that all those unconscious beliefs or all of those destructive cellular memories that we don't know that we have, we don't know what's in there, they're going to start manifesting as stuff in our life, like illness or disease or even cancer, because that's what happens. We know that all illnesses, all disease, is just symptoms of a more deeper issue that has to do with where we are within our own hearts. You know what I'm talking about? Where we are within our sense of regret, our sense of whether or not our life makes a difference or not, a sense of whether or not we've done okay with our kids, a sense of whether or not we've done okay for our parents. The point is that there's so much about our life that is matters of the heart, and yet no doctor's stethoscope is going to be able to detect those issues. No amount of examination, no PET scan, no intervention is going to be sufficient to really look inside and figure out, well, what am I carrying within me that might translate into something that really means that I have to really examine the depths of my being and really clean up, perhaps, what might be in there that is not serving me. Well, the one thing that this is about is really looking at, in many ways, the Unity Movement and its founders, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, in looking at our origins. We began as a healing movement, a prayer and healing movement. We began because we recognized that while there is this principle of wholeness, of oneness, and yet our experience in life often looks as if there's something different happening. And yet we have these most profound teachings on wholeness, on abundance, and yet sometimes we're the most impoverished and diseased people. And so what is the big disconnect? What's the big mismatch? What are we missing? And so I'm suggesting that what we're missing is this entire arena that's about the healing of the heart. I'm suggesting that that's what we're missing, that we have yet to create a coherent teaching that helps us embrace that dimension of our journey and really come to terms with it. Because until we do, we're going to be subjected to the methodologies, the protocols, the treatments, the way to manage those things with with people trying to manage us from the outside in. And that's backwards, right? So let's look at a different process. So as many of you know, shared a month and a half ago about my own cancer diagnosis. Learned on February 17th that I have stage 4 metastatic melanoma, which is a rare form of internal melanoma that has no external point of origin. My doctor suggested that I contracted a severe sunburn early in childhood. That perhaps set that process up, set it up within my system. But the point is that no disease process can manifest itself unless it attaches itself first to an issue of the heart. And until we begin to explore issues, matters of the heart, we won't know what we're set up to undo. Because matters of the heart are things that got implanted in us that weren't the truth of us, and yet manifest nonetheless in our life, perhaps as some kind of process. Well, early on when I got my diagnosis, before I shared anything with you all, I had to come to terms with things. And so what am I going to do? And my first thought was that this is about matters of my heart. This is about my regret. This is about my unforgiveness. This is about the untrue beliefs that I've carried around with me. And so I have to have a means of exploring that. Now, I've had the Q process for a number of years, and many of you have been through the Q process, and that's a very powerful thing to begin to sort out and to have a relationship with that part of us that is mostly unconscious, but we can begin to expunge some of those more vivid negative images, some of those more gross, unhealthy beliefs, and even some of those memories. We can begin to address those things in the context of understanding, because Mary and Joseph weren't our parents. Of course, we took on beliefs about ourselves that weren't true, but yet, nonetheless, those beliefs, such as I'm not good enough, or I'm not enough, or there's something wrong with me, I'm not worthy, I'm not lovable, while all of those things are false, we can know that intellectually, we still know that there is still this boy or little girl inside that believes those things. And that's where those illnesses, those symptoms arise from. So until we have a way to address that, we're sort of dealing with outside-in kind of approaches. And so I began the process very immediately looking at what alternative ways can I engage that begin to translate in terms of working on that deeper inner level. And one of the earlier things that we were introduced was something that has the acronym THC. And so I began to work with this approach. Now, THC is an acronym for the healing codes. Well, you thought I was referring to something else? All right. Anyway, so the healing codes is what I'm referring to, and I'm not going to deny it. I have used this, and Jane and I, we began the healing codes, almost by accident, in the sense that Jane had bought this book about 3 or 4 years ago, and she buys most of her books about 3 or 4 years before she reads them. Nobody else is probably like that. I'm not like that, that's for sure. Anyway, and so I don't read books per se. Jane's the avid reader. She reads about 12 or 13 different books at once. And so she reads while we drive. And when we drive, she always picks up a book. And that's how we've read all of Joe Dispenza's. And so she asked me, should we read this book? This was before I was diagnosed. And I said, I'm not interested. I think I've done most of the healing work I need to be doing through the Q process. And then I share my information as David had counseled me in a previous conversation. He said, now, as soon as you tell the folks You've got this thing going on. There'll be however many people, that many remedies offered to you. And indeed, there is that many remedies offered, and among which someone had mentioned that the healing code was something that they felt was of value. And so I said, okay, let's read it. And so in the course of reading the book, it was very obvious to me that this is the missing piece for us in terms of our process and having a comprehensive, coherent program of having a transformative approach to life. And that is, we're missing a piece that works on the unconscious material that we're not conscious that we're carrying. And wouldn't it be good to have something that works effectively on what we don't know that we have that is obviously going to manifest itself later on in our life in some form of Carmageddon? Right? We have to deal with our own stuff. Okay, so...
38. 39.
Yeah. You all come off here about the same age, same problems. Spend about 50 weeks a year getting knots in your rope, and then you think 2 weeks up here will untie for you. None of you get it. Do you know what the secret of life is?
No, what?
This.
Your finger?
One thing. Just one thing. You stick to that and everything else don't mean.
That's great, but what's the one thing?
That's what you gotta figure out.
All right, so we gotta figure out what this one thing is because, you know, that's sort of, well, that's what we have to figure out. What's the one thing that is going to be unravel all this for us? And so, actually, there's... here, let me get this right. See if there we go. Okay, there's three one things actually. At least that's what the authors of the Healing Code suggest. That there's one thing. So let's just go over those things. The first one thing is that there's one thing on the planet that can heal just about anything that we might experience in our journey. In other words, there's one thing that can take care of everything for the most part. And what is that one thing? What is the number one thing? We're one click away from the correct answer. No, it's our immune system. One of the things that the doctor told me that when I went to the surgical oncologist, the first doctor I saw after I was told that this doesn't look good, basically said this is immune issue. You said that your immune system can't see your cancer to deal with it. It's invisible. Your type of cancer is invisible to your immune system. And if your immune system was working correctly, it would notice it and it would wipe it out. Okay, almost every doctor knows this now. And that one of the things I've discovered was doctors know different things depending upon they're just like ministers. They're just like everybody else. You know, just depends upon the time of day. And when you ask them, they know something that at that moment that might be the key to your unlock the future for you. But the point is that we can just basically say the one thing in the planet that can save us from anything that is out there, and that is our immune system. But the second one thing is what we also need to understand. And that is, the one thing number two is that there's one thing that will shut off our immune system. You know what that is? That's closer. Okay, and that is stress. All right, but not the kind of stress you're thinking about. Okay, so all of us have situational stress, or we have experiences or conditions in our life that are stressful or stress-filled. And depending upon how we be with those moments, determine whether or not the effects of that stressor is going to stretch us or somehow diminish our immune capacity. What stress is in the context of, from the body's perspective, is different from the context of our ego's perspective, or the psychological dimension of stress is different than the neurological dimension of stress. So I'm just wanting to paint the picture that when I say stress shuts off the immune system, I'm not talking about a challenging work day. Although I will say that studies have shown that 5 minutes of recalled anger is sufficient to disable your immune system for 4 hours. 5 minutes of recalled anger, not even anger in the heat of the moment. So our immune system becomes the default thing that gets discarded when we're in the stress response, you see. So when we know this, we can sort of say, oh, okay, well then what dynamics affect the neurological balance that determines whether or not a stressor is going to be detrimental to my well-being. Now, what's the third one thing? One thing, number three, that turns back on the immune system? And that is healing of the heart. Healing of the heart. Okay, so now we can focus on if we look at the heart, issues of the heart. What I mean by issues of the heart are regrets. All of us have them. Do you have something that you regret in your life? We may be conscious of certain regrets, but think about regrets that you may not be conscious of. Any unforgiveness? Are you holding yourself hostage because of something that you've done in the past? Are you your own worst enemy? You know, as we begin to understand that, you know, any unforgiveness, any regrets, and the things that we might inadvertently be doing that's just simply a part of our lifestyle that we know is not good. I mean, are you doing things right now that you know is not good, but you're just compelled because you're just trying to survive, you're just trying to manage, you're just trying to feel okay? All of us do these things. Phones need to be on stun. All right. Okay, so as we think about these issues, then what we need to do, okay, matters of the heart. Okay, that focuses in. Now, let's just say that for the most part, that's unconscious to us, all the things that are issues of our heart. But we just need to know that there's stuff in there, but we don't know what's in there. That's okay for now. You okay so far that we focus on this? So what I'm wanting us to understand is that now let's understand stress from the body's context. What is the kind of stress that ultimately shuts down our immune system and the processes that keep us healthy? So there's two branches of our central nervous system. One's called the sympathetic, and the other is called the parasympathetic. One speeds things up, one slows things down. One has more to do with the stress response or our fight-flight instinct to manage challenging moments. The other side is all about healing and restoration. And as we look at what happens when we get triggered in a stressful situation, the sympathetic nervous system, that branch gets activated. So what happens is there's increased blood flow, blood pressure, heart rate, stress hormones, adrenaline, cortisol becomes a part of the mix depending upon the level of imbalance. But the point is that saliva, digestion, and immune function stop, which is not really a problem for 5 minutes. But chronic stress, when you're stressed out all the time, means that your digestive system and your immune function is not online very, very much, and it's not working very good. On the other side of the equation, where the parasympathetic nervous system, think about a parachute that's slowly coming down. It calms your emotional system down. It calms everything down. And in order to calm things down, it removes blood from the brain. And it also removes blood from your muscles because they're not needed. And it moves all the blood to your organs and the digestive process. And actually, it moves blood actually into the brain too. I should have mentioned that it removes blood from the brain in the sympathetic nervous system side. So when you're fighting, you don't have to think about certain things, like whether or not this is the right fight or not. It's just you're reacting. So the point is that when these two systems are in opposition, in other words, there's a kind of confusion at this level of our neurological state, it's like driving with one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake. Imagine flooring the gas pedal hard on the brake. What would happen to your car if you did that for very long? It would break it down, wouldn't it? Well, the same thing is true with respect to ourselves. If we are in an acute state of stress all the time, and at the same time we're trying to medicate ourselves or numb ourselves out, we're giving ourselves all kinds of confused messages. So hopefully we understand that stress from the body's point of view on a neurological context is different than situational stress. And so this is what we should be concerned about, that if we're in a chronic state of stress, not only do we have diminished capacity in terms of thinking things through, but our immune system's offline, our digestive system's offline, we're dumping toxins and undigested material back into our bloodstream, which is not healthy. And over a long period of time, it's very problematic. So this sympathetic nervous system and parasympathetic nervous system imbalance creates negative image imprinting. So in other words, when you're in a triggering moment and you're upset, the things that are happening to you are happening in the context of a kind of holographic experience. You're dealing with images, and those images, because our brain has a negativity bias, are focused on all those negative images. And so you're just constantly seeing half empty in your life because of the nervous system's imbalance. You are compelled to see things darkly when it's out of whack. And we are engaged in unhealthy beliefs. Our own sense of not enough becomes exacerbated. And then we also have a problem with cellular memories. In other words, the stuff that's stored, our unconsciousness, is literally our body. Our body is our unconscious mind in expression. And so everything that happens in our life is imprinted on in some level. I mentioned to you about my weight loss over the course of several years, and that I went from, 230 pounds over here at one time, and then, lost some weight. And I discovered that when I got down to about 175, I started to have back trouble. And I recall that when I was gaining weight, right at 175, I started having back trouble. And then I stopped having back trouble when I got really heavy. And then when I started to lose weight, when I got down to here at 175, I started having back trouble again. And my doctor said, well, it's cellular memory. What's happening is your body's remembering this stage in your life right now. I have a friend of mine who is a therapist, massage therapist, that had conveyed a story about him working with the patient that had quit smoking 20 years earlier, and he was working on this person, and by the time he was done, the room reeked with smoke. So bad that he had to open up the windows from working on this person. And it was a phenomenal thing to witness, that this person, after 20 years, after getting down deep, started to emit, the cells started to release nicotine smoke, which is amazing. So all of these things really, in terms of the cue process, vernacular, it's our shadow. In other words, the shadow dynamic, or the shadow part of ourself, that which is not the truth of us, but what we've acquired in terms of beliefs and cellular memories, it's impossible for us in this lifetime to expunge every single memory to heal it individually. We have to have a way to cast the net and know that whatever is contained in the net, because God knows what is contained in this net, and because God can do that deeper work, we release it to that process. And so what is that process of releasing this to a deeper dimension? Well, it's the healing codes. And in the course of working with the healing codes, which is very simple, most of the book is explaining the science behind it, and the part that has to actually do with the healing codes is very, very small, and I can just give you just a bit it in a nutshell. But the point is that the outcome of this talk is for us to begin to look at the healing codes, just like we looked at the Q process, as being another way that we can create a culture within the community of those who are able to hold the container of being able to heal on our community's unconscious material, another word for it I can't say because I've already used that word too many times in the last 6 months. But we can work on healing that unconscious stuff. And so before we get there, let me just give you a couple other pieces of information. This slide that I showed, and I apologize, Linda, in advance, but I'm pointing to a slide now that has a description of all the brainwave frequencies. And we talked last time about worry as it being in the high beta brainwave pattern. In other words, where our mind is so busy that we're just stuck in that loop. Well, all the lower brainwave functions that really evolved as we grew up from infancy all the way to age 12, we're growing, our brain is maturing. But in the course of its maturing process, prior to 12 years old, before we have the cognitive capacity to edit and challenge what we're taking in into our consciousness, prior to this, though, that we're subjected to a kind of brain that is highly susceptible. In other words, children are in a constant state of self-hypnosis insofar as they're highly suggestible. And in their suggestibility, they're able to take on things like imaginary friends without even questioning that. They're able to take on things. But at the same time, they take on things like the no that they hear 1,000 times more than the yes that they hear. Sometimes they take that on as being a message that goes against their sense of worth. So we can imagine how shame arises in a little individual's psyche because they don't have the capacity to question what has happened to them in the context of who they are and what's unfolding for them. Dr. Joe Dispenza says the theta and alpha are highly susceptible brainwave states. Young children don't yet have the analytical mind to edit or make sense of what happens to them, so all information that's absorbed by their experiences are automatically encoded directly into their subconscious mind. In other words, they just know that their emotional state has been altered, and they just put the altering source and their own sense of well-being, they mesh them together and think, I'm bad because I don't feel good. That's how it translates into that psyche. So they encode the things that happen in terms of their discomforts in the context of something's wrong with me. So this is not something that has to be fixed. It's just something that we have to acknowledge that is contributing to the material that I've carried with me, that I've taken on, that now is going to translate in some form of dis-ease if I don't somehow disarm that through some kind of spiritual practice. So the healing code basically uses four hand positions, and if you're familiar with Reiki or any other kind of healing energy modality, it should be something that you just take like a duck to water. But basically, we all know that we're energy beings, right? And that we can extend energy. We do this with our young people, right? Yeah. And when we go to each other for hugs and for treatments, we hold each other's hand. We want to feel connected to something greater than ourselves. And so if you can imagine each of your fingers as being like a little energy center, imagine little LED lights and just like little flashlights. And that if you direct a flashlight, that's like directing energy, healing energy. And so there's four healing centers that represent the healing centers that impact the immune function. And so the first is the brow area, right here. And so it's where the pituitary, the pineal gland, the third eye is. And if you just direct some of that energy right there for a bit. And so in the healing codes, it has you do it for a certain time period, like maybe a minute or less. And then you move down to the Adam's apple area. And there's the thyroid gland, and behind it is the spinal cord, and then the root of the brain. And so you don't touch. Don't touch. No, you don't want to touch. You want to be out here. You want to be like a spark plug, have a little gap. Yeah, no touchy. And then right behind the jaw, right underneath the lower ear, then you're going to zap your amygdala, hippocampus, and then go up above to the temples behind, just above, just a little bit behind, the same thing. Now you're going to zap hippopotamus. No, it's not the hippopotamus. You know, I have to be a neuroscientist to be a minister now. It's just very complex. Anyway, the point is that you do these hand positions. You also have a prayer. There's a little prayer context for it. It's something that will demonstrate for you. It's too don't have time to go into it. But it's just simple hand movements. And you direct the energy through an intentional process, and you do that three or four times a day, and so here's, I'll close with this. So right now, as I stand here right now, when I shared with you about 6 weeks ago that I had this cancer, I had 6 tumors, external tumors, and 30 internal tumors. And as David describes, when he goes for his PET scan, when he first started, it was like a Christmas tree. You see your body and you see all these little lights. Well, little lights are tumors. And they inject you with radioactive glucose because tumors love sugar. And they live off sugar, and so it lights it up. And so here I have the 6 tumors and on the external, and then all these things everywhere else. One on my bowel, one on my liver, one in my lung, and this everywhere else. But now, right now, all of my external tumors are gone. And it's gone sooner than the Keytruda could ever show results. So the alternative things that I'm doing is working. And so I can think about the things that I'm doing in terms of your prayer support, the distance healing that I've asked for people who have been willing to share that, the massages that I've had, the healing code work that I've been doing, the supplements, the homeopathic remedies, and some of the other alternative things. I can't say what has translated this, but I do know that my doctor is going to have to scratch his head, and there won't be any way that he's going to be able to explain it, because this is how it works for us in metaphysics, right? There's no explanation, but yet we know what we know. And so my closing comment is, how do I end the talk? So what I'm wanting to end up by saying is that, you know, we're going to have the healing code as a book study. We're going to experiment with it like we do everything else. But the bottom line is that how can we be as a community that somehow becomes recognized for being a healing influence in this community? And so, so let's enjoy the journey, because we have great things to do. God bless you all. Thank you.